Whatever might have been gray and unclear before is certainly quite clear right now. We're not supposed to use government power and prestige for political gain.
And that's coming from a House Republican?
Well, I don't know why I came here tonight.
That's why.
I got the feeling that something ain't right.
No, it ain't.
I'm so scared in case I fall off my chair. And I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you.
Here I am.
Yes, I'm stuck in the middle with you.
From Pacifica Radio in Los Angeles, this is The Bradcast, as heard on KPFK 90.7 FM in L.A. Also in California, in Red Bluff and Redding on KFOI, Round Mountains KKRN, and Eureka's KGOE. Up on in Oregon on the Central Coast on KYAQ, Cottage Grove's KSO, and Eugene's KEPW. Lancaster, Pennsylvania's WLRI, Maui, Hawaii's KAKU. In Columbus, Ohio on WGRN, we're going to be talking about your former governor in a second. In Palinville, New York on WLPP, Grand Rapids, Michigan's WPRR, in New Orleans on WHIV, Gallup, New Mexico's KNIZ, Concord, New Hampshire's WNHN, in Fayetteville, Arkansas on KPSQ, in Seattle on KODX, Janesville, Wisconsin's WADR, and Minneapolis, St. Paul's AM 950 KTNF. We also stream coast to coast and around the globe every day on the internets on the Progressive Voices channel, Netroots Radio, Indie Media Weekly, FYI Nation, NicoleSandler.com, Radio Free Brooklyn, Workforce Rising, Deprogrammed Radio, and Detour Talk. You can run, but you can't hide from the broadcast as much as you or I might like to. I'm Brad Friedman, your friendly investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, and all-around swell fellow, says me from bradblog.com, blanketing planet Earth 5 days a week. Thank you very much for joining us today. Coming up, I'm sure you have seen those two mooks who were arrested by federal officials in New York last week as associates of Rudy Giuliani. Those two Soviet-born Ukrainian-Americans who were nabbed at JFK with one-way tickets to Vienna, who were indicted by federal prosecutors in the Southern District of New York on campaign finance charges, having given hundreds of thousands of dollars in strawman donations, using a phony company to launder the true source of the funds to Donald Trump's super PAC in exchange for becoming political players, smack dab in the middle of this Ukraine fiasco and now impeachment inquiry. I'm sure you have heard about them by now. At least I hope you have. Well, those two super geniuses who already were under federal investigation as long ago as July of 2018, they were being looked at by federal prosecutors for, a year and a half at this point, and we didn't know it, but some people did, including the nonpartisan nonprofit watchdog group Campaign Legal Center. They noticed their questionable donations to Trump super PAC using an apparently fake corporation with funding that nobody has still been able to account for. Well, we'll be joined momentarily by Brendan Fisher of the Campaign Legal Center, who filed this complaint against these guys that kicked off this eventual indictment. We'll talk with Brendan about that complaint, which resulted in the indictment, along with the continuing investigation by the Southern District of New York. That's the office of the DOJ that Rudy Giuliani used to lead as U.S. attorney in the Southern District. And Rudy Giuliani himself is thought to potentially be under investigation in this same probe. But more than that, more than what these two guys, Lev Parnas and Igor Fruman, actually did with Giuliani and Trump and a Texas congressman in this Ukraine affair, I'm actually interested in what the entire thing tells us about our nightmarish campaign finance system. Since this is really the nightmare scenario, well, for a number of things, including foreign influence on our political system and U.S. foreign policy, and frankly, just rich guys' influence on our political system and both domestic and foreign policy. This, to me, is a much larger issue than just what the effects are on Donald Trump and his impeachment and Rudy Giuliani. Because even if that's once taken care of, we're still going to have this system in place that allows these yutzes like Parnas and Fruman to be able to actually affect U.S. policy. Anyway, we're going to get to that in a second. First, you got to give credit to Fox News here. When they go to bat for their party, man, they are good at it. Laura Ingraham called George W. Bush era torture memo author John Yoo, the guy who actually came up with a secret legal justification for the Bush administration to carry out torture of prisoners, which, by the way, despite his phony justification, torture is totally banned by international treaties and by American law. And nobody, by the way, was ever held accountable for that war crime in the Bush administration that John Yoo helped pull off. Well, that guy, John Yoo, was invited on as a guest to Laura Ingraham's show to offer a very novel defense against the impeachment of Donald Trump, at least as novel as his legal explanation that torture was not actually torture. Here's what John Yoo said.
Well, I'm glad they're reading the Constitution and citing the framers for once, but they've got it exactly backwards. What the framers thought was that the American people would judge a president at the time of the election. They would never have won an impeachment within a year of an election. It's up to the American people. If the American people think Trump has done wrong, they don't have to return to office. If they don't think this was important, they'll reelect him.
So you got that, Desi Doyen? The American people would never want an impeachment within a year of an election.
The framers did not want an impeachment. They put it in the Constitution, but that they just forgot to put that part where
to write it down.
Yeah, but he knows.
So what we have here is the framers did not want any apparently new Supreme Court justices within a year of an election, according to Mitch McConnell and the Republicans back in 2016. Even though the framers forgot to write that into the Constitution. And now also, too, the framers do not want to impeach anybody within that same year before a presidential election. I guess in this case, actually 13 months of a presidential election. Now, I am no constitutional expert, but I will be damned if I can find either of those two provisions in my copy of the Constitution. These folks who love the Founding Fathers, who pretend to love the Founding Fathers, sure do know a lot about what they must have been thinking, even though they didn't seem to write this stuff down. But anyway,
well, I'm sure that, you know, he'll have exactly the same opinion if it had been a Democratic president.
Oh, yeah. Not within a year. Impeach Barack Obama? No, we've got an election in a year. Sure. Yeah. Anyway, in the meantime, you would barely know it from the reaction of congressional Republicans, at least as of Friday morning, according to TPM's Matt Shum, that White House Chief of Staff Mick Mulvaney had publicly confirmed a central question of House Democrats' impeachment inquiry on national television. Mulvaney said in a press conference on Thursday that the White House had indeed withheld military funds appropriated by Congress for Ukraine due to Donald Trump's insistence that Ukraine investigate a conspiracy theory about Democrats and the 2016 election. Now, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi called Mulvaney's admissions a, quote, confession, and said it's an example of the administration trying to make, quote, lawlessness normal and even make lawlessness a virtue. Here's the key part of Mulvaney's idiotic admission in question from the White House press room on Thursday.
Did he also mention to me in the past that the corruption related to the DNC server? Absolutely. No question about that. But that's it. And that's why we held up the money. Now, there was a report.
So the demand for an investigation into the Democrats was part of the reason that he ordered to withhold funding to Ukraine.
The look back to what happened in 2016 certainly was part of the thing that he was worried about in corruption with that nation. And that is absolutely appropriate.
Withholding the funding.
Yeah, which ultimately then flowed.
But to be clear, what you just described is a quid pro quo. It is funding will not flow unless the investigation into the Democratic server happens as well.
We do that all the time with foreign policy. And I have news for everybody. Get over it. There's going to be political influence in foreign policy.
Got that, Desi? Get over it. There's going to be political influence in foreign policy. So that would seem to be a pretty clear admission of a quid pro quo that the president has been insisting over and over and over again did not happen until his chief of staff admitted that it did. Now, later on Thursday night after that statement, Mulvaney was forced to essentially put out a statement saying he did not say what it seems pretty clear that he did say on videotape. But that admission, walked back or otherwise, has been the source of a lot of questions to Republican officials ever since. The strongest Republican voice in reaction to Mulvaney, at least in Congress as of this morning anyway, according to Shewem, was Senator Lisa Murkowski, Republican from Alaska. At the Capitol, according to Alaska Public Media, a reporter asked Murkowski if Mulvaney's comments, appearing to concede that the White House did, in fact, hold up aid to Ukraine until they agreed to investigate the 2016 election. She was asked if that concerned her. She said, yes, absolutely, it's a concern. You don't hold up foreign aid that we had previously appropriated for a political initiative, period. And that is from a Republican senator. Though she added she needed to study exactly what it was that Mick Mulvaney said. Meantime, Congressman Francis Rooney of Florida, Republican of Florida, told CNN on Thursday that Mulvaney's comments acknowledging the White House had withheld aid were, quote, troubling. Rooney is a member of the House Foreign Affairs Committee who ran for Congress in 2016 as a Trump supporter, advertising his support for Trump's border wall. In an interview on air on Friday, Rooney told CNN that Mulvaney had made the issue pretty clear and said that he could not rule out supporting impeachment in the House.
Whatever might have been gray and unclear before is certainly quite clear right now that the actions were related to getting some of the Ukraine to do some of these things. I think that, as you just put on there, Senator Murkowski admits, said it perfectly. We're not supposed to use government power and prestige for political gain.
In your eyes, Congressman, do you think that this rises to the level of impeachment? You just said it is very clear now that there was a quid pro quo, that defense money from Ukraine was withheld so that a politically motivated investigation could be promised. Is that impeachable?
I don't know. I want to study it some more. I want to hear the next set of testimony next week from a couple of more ambassadors. But it's certainly very, very serious and troubling.
Well, respectfully, sir, what don't you know? I mean, if that is what happened, which the White House just laid out, what is the unknown for you still on that front? Meaning, what more do you want to hear?
Probably the only unknown would be if this is such of gravitas or whatever you want to say, so grave and serious that it rises to the level of impeachment. I mean, I don't think this is as much as Richard Nixon did, but I'm very mindful of the fact that back during Watergate, everybody said, oh, it's a witch hunt to get Nixon. Turns out it wasn't a witch hunt. It was absolutely correct. So I just want to make sure that I get all the data I can get. And I'm talking to everybody I can talk to understand all this.
I think that's fair. But it's clear to me you're saying at this point you are not ruling out the possibility that this is an impeachable offense for the president.
I don't think you can rule anything out till you know all the facts.
Okay.
Every time one of these people testifies, we get more information about what was going on over there.
Yes, we do. And kudos, by the way, to that CNN reporter. I don't know her name. Do you know her name?
I think that's Poppy Harlow, is her name.
And I'm not sure if that's who it was. Anyway, she was very good pressing him on that. Earlier on Friday, Congressman Adam Kitzinger of Illinois also expressed alarm about Mulvaney's remarks, calling them quite concerning and that we're going to have to get more information as we're seeing this happen rapidly. Well, they certainly are. And I suspect we're going to see a lot more comments from congressional Republicans about that in the coming days. Meanwhile, former Ohio Governor John Kasich said that Donald Trump should, in fact, be impeached. This is a major switch for a former Republican presidential candidate who had previously said there was not enough evidence to impeach the president. Kasich is a CNN senior political commentator. He's a former Fox News host, as well as a former member of Congress. He told CNN's Anna Cabrera on Friday that the, quote, final straw for him was Mulvaney's admission.
This has been a very difficult 24 hours for me. The issue of impeachment is really big to me. And when I heard what Mulvaney said, the chief of staff of the president, it pushed me really across the Rubicon. And I'll tell you why. Withholding military aid, vital military aid, to a nation like Ukraine, which has Russian troops inside its territory, that's threatened all the time, that withholding it so that a political operation can take place, investigate this thing around the server, and we're going to withhold the aid until you do that. To me, it's totally inappropriate. It's an abuse of power. Now, I know that there are presidents that will withhold aid because they have policy differences, but this is not a policy difference. And so my view is that, look, I fought with people on the air about, is there a quid pro quo, and does this rise to the level of impeachment? I now believe that it does. And okay. I say it with great sadness. This is not something I really wanted to do. I mean, I voted to impeach Bill Clinton, and that was really hard. And this has been excruciatingly hard. But this kind of behavior, in my opinion, cannot be tolerated, and action is going to have to be taken.
Let me get some clarification from you, though. When you say you believe this behavior rises to the level of impeachment, are you saying, yes, this president should be impeached based on what we know now? And does that also mean that you believe he should be tried in the Senate and removed from office?
First of all, I want to see what the articles of impeachment are that the Democrats put together. And secondly, I don't like the way they've conducted this without having a vote on an impeachment inquiry. But if you're asking me, if I was sitting in the House of Representatives today and you were to ask me, how do I feel? Do I think impeachment should move forward and should go for a full examination and a trial in the United States Senate? My vote would be yes.
My vote would be yes. Kasich went on to say, if Barack Obama had been doing something like this, Republicans would be going crazy. The former Ohio governor urged Republicans to, quote, look at yourself and say, what do we expect out of the president? Are there some lines that simply cannot be crossed? He said it is very difficult for a Republican to come out and say anything like this because they're going to get attacked at home. He said you got to be willing to take the heat, frankly. We'll see how many of them are willing to take the heat. This is getting harder and harder for them to explain, even with the help of Fox News, however they can come up with it. So we'll see. This is moving fast. All right, let's take a quick break, and we will come back with another angle on all of this, how the arrest of two Giuliani associates last week revealed yet again how shockingly broken and dangerous our existing campaign finance laws are. Brendan Fisher of the Campaign Legal Center, whose complaint helped lead to the lockup of these guys and maybe, just maybe, an indictment for Rudy Giuliani. We'll see. Brendan joins us next on the broadcast. I'm Brad Friedman. Don't touch that dial. Sure is. Welcome back to the broadcast. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. On Thursday, Donald Trump's ambassador to the European Union, a Trump donor by the name of Gordon Sondland, testified to House impeachment investigators for nearly 10 hours about his role in the widening scandal concerning Donald Trump's withholding of some $400 million in congressionally allocated military aid to Ukraine in what appears to be an impeachable quid pro quo exchange, at least according to the president's acting chief of staff, Mick Mulvaney, before he tried to walk it back, for Ukraine's agreement to announce an investigation of supposed corruption by the Biden family in the country and a supposed Ukrainian connection to meddling on behalf of Democrats in the 2016 presidential election. It wasn't the Russians who meddled on behalf of Trump in that election. According to this theory, it was actually Russia's enemies in Ukraine who colluded with Democrats to somehow help Hillary Clinton. That, despite a lack of evidence to support either that charge or that there was any corruption by Joe Biden or his son Hunter, who had been given a well-paid seat on a Ukrainian national gas company by the name of Burisma, while his father served as vice president. Both of those theories have been circulating for some time in right-wing media fever swamps. But a lack of evidence has never kept Donald Trump from believing and acting on anything that he believes may serve his political or financial interests. During his Thursday testimony in the impeachment probe, Trump's Ambassador Sondland reportedly claimed that he and other diplomats were ordered by the president to work with Trump's personal attorney, former New York City Mayor Rudy Giuliani, in their dealings with Ukraine, even as some of the career diplomats in the U.S. Foreign Service, whose job was to directly work with Ukraine, as they were sidelined, while Giuliani appeared, according to the Washington Post, to be running his own shadow foreign policy within the Trump administration for some time. Giuliani's work in Ukraine, we have now come to learn, was aided by two guys that almost nobody had heard of until a week or so ago, when they were dramatically arrested and charged by prosecutors out of the U.S. Attorney's Office in the Southern District of New York at JFK Airport while trying to flee the country with one-way tickets to Vienna. Those two men, as you have likely seen their infamous mugshots by now, are Soviet-born Ukrainian-American citizens by the name of Lev Parnas and Igor Fruman. The two, clients and/or associates of Giuliani, were taken into federal custody for their alleged effort to funnel illegal campaign contributions to Republicans, including hundreds of thousands of dollars to Donald Trump's super PAC, and to Texas Congressman Pete Sessions, who apparently attempted to intercede with the White House on the Ukrainian affair just after meeting with the two men after the donations were made through a shell corporation to Donald Trump's PAC. That shell corporation was allegedly created specifically to buy political influence. The influence effort scheme appears to have worked, and worked well, until it didn't. Parnas and Fruman got very high access and some of the favors that they had hoped to purchase, at least until those meddling kids at the good government watchdog group Campaign Legal Center noticed their curious contributions and reported the matter in a formal complaint to the Federal Elections Commission back in July of 2018, more than a year ago. According to the CLC, their complaint to the FEC helped trigger a series of revelations showing how the pair leveraged the access their contributions had afforded to deepen their connections with figures close to the president, where they were actually able to alter actual U.S. foreign policy in Ukraine, which held up hundreds of millions of dollars in military aid to a country at war with Russia. And all it cost the pair was a few hundred thousand laundered dollars that they passed on from a shadowy source in, well, we think but don't know, Russia, to change the course of U.S. foreign policy. Working closely with the president's personal attorney, Giuliani, according to the CLC, their efforts touched two branches of U.S. government, two presidential administrations in Ukraine, at least five countries, numerous individuals in and out of government, and now an impeachment inquiry into the U.S. president himself. The recent federal indictment charges Parnas and Fruman with conspiring to violate campaign finance law's straw donor ban and foreign national contribution ban, and they were charged with two counts of lying to the FEC when responding to the allegations in CLC's complaint. Joining us now to discuss this sordid affair, and frankly, of most interest to me, what we should all learn about the very pernicious effects and serious concerns about the influence of dark money on our political system of the type funneled into Trump's super PAC, and seemingly to his lawyer, Giuliani, by Parnas and Fruman, is our old friend, Brendan Fischer, associate counsel at the Campaign Legal Center in Washington, D.C., where he directs CLC's work before federal regulatory agencies like the FEC, advocating vigorous and fair enforcement of campaign finance and ethics laws. ethic laws. How quaint. And holding candidates and political committees accountable for violating those laws. Well, which he certainly seems to have helped accomplish here with CLC's complaint to the FEC concerning these two Giuliani-tied mooks who were busted last week trying to flee the country. Brendan Fisher, welcome back to the broadcast, sir.
Great. Thank you for having me.
Well, wow, and congratulations to you and CLC for the role that you guys played in this sordid mess. I've got a lot to ask you, and I hope to have time here to ask you about the White House announcement that the G7 summit meeting to be hosted next year by the U.S. will now take place at Trump's resort in Florida. I suspect you and CLC may have some thoughts on that, but can you give me a quick idea, just in a nutshell, pun intended perhaps, because I want to spend more time on the underlying matters here, but the type of influence that Parnas and Fruman were able to buy, what did they actually get, or what were they able to do in exchange for that shadowy money that they paid to the Trump super PAC, and I guess the $500,000 that they paid to Giuliani?
Yeah, it's really pretty astonishing, and we're still learning what level of influence they were able to buy, mm-hmm. and we're also still don't really know where the money came from. But what we do know is that back in early 2018, Parnas and Fruman poured around $675,000 of political contributions into our political system. $325,000 of that amount went to President Trump's super PAC by way of this shell corporation. And the big giving opened a lot of doors. It got them into political fundraisers where they rubbed shoulders with President Trump's inner circle. That money allowed them to build and deepen a relationship with Giuliani, and they were then able to leverage that relationship in order to advance this narrative about Ukraine, the same narrative about Ukraine that President Trump espoused in his call with Ukrainian President Zelensky, which has now led to this impeachment inquiry.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what they were after, I still don't know that we entirely know. I think the two big things that they were pushing for the removal of the U.S. ambassador to Ukraine, mm-hmm. Marie Yovanovitch, and they were pushing for the investigation into the Biden family. And reportedly, this pair was looking to advance their own personal financial interests by getting an energy company up and running. And they wanted to re-engineer the restructure and re-engineer the board of Ukraine's state gas company, in order to get contracts for importing natural gas from the U.S. to Ukraine. And they thought that the ambassador, Yovanovitch, who was an opponent of corruption, would have stood in their way. And, you know, that very well may be true, but there are a number of other powerful political figures in and around Ukraine and wealthy oligarchs in and around Ukraine who also stood to benefit from the removal of a vocal opponent of corruption in Ukraine.
And
there were others who stood to benefit from the restructuring of Ukraine's gas company.
Mm-hmm.
There were also political actors who had an axe grind against Yovanovitch, and there were others who just wanted access to President Trump's inner circle. So there are a lot of different interests at play here, and you know, part of the reason why it matters whose interests are at play is because we still don't really know where the money came from.
Which I want to get to, because one of the things that Nancy Pelosi reportedly was saying in that infamous photograph now with her standing up to Donald Trump at that White House meeting a few days ago was that all roads lead to Russia. And it does seem as if all of the interests here line up also with Russia's interests. So and you can see, you know, very, you know, specifically how this sort of worked. These guys appeared to have given a whole bunch of money to Trump's super PAC. Trump's super PAC then gave a whole bunch of money to now former Congressman Pete Sessions, the Texas Republican. And they met with, apparently he met with these guys or both of these guys, and then immediately made a call to the White House to encourage them to get rid of that U.S. ambassador to Ukraine. Is that sort of the timeline of how that worked?
Yeah, I think, you know, the Pete Sessions piece of this is, mm-hmm. is probably the clearest and most obvious example of money buying both access and influence.
Mm-hmm.
These two guys, Lev Parnas and Igor Fruman, both born overseas but have lived in the U.S. for many years, and they live mostly in Florida and Long Island.
Mm-hmm.
Pete Sessions is from Texas.
Right.
He's a congressman who represents North Texas, and you know, members of Congress do not personally meet with people from outside of their district in their D.C. office unless those people have something to offer. And these two had something to offer, and it was money. They hadn't given to Pete Sessions before. They did not have an existing relationship, but it was right around the time that Parnas and Fruman were laundering this $325,000 contribution to the Super PAC, America First Action, that Sessions agreed to meet with them. And on the same day that they met, Sessions sent off this letter to Secretary of State Pompeo urging the firing of Yovanovitch and citing an account that he had received from these close, unnamed companions. Sessions had no apparent background in Ukraine.
Mm-hmm.
He had no apparent background in foreign policy. It's not clear that he necessarily knew anything about Yovanovitch, but you hear this congressman from North Texas is meeting with these two men from Florida,
mm-hmm.
and all of a sudden inserting himself into this pretty sensitive and complex foreign policy matter because these donors asked him to.
With claims that Sessions had claims that the U.S. ambassador to Ukraine, Yovanovitch, was bad-mouthing Donald Trump, something that Sessions supposedly would really know nothing about. In other words, he was seemingly passing on exactly what it was that these two guys told him, and he was only meeting with these two guys because they were known to have money and be giving it to Republican campaigns. I mean, you couldn't see a more clear way of how our campaign finance system has become corrupted by this type of money.
Yeah, I think that is an accurate assessment. And the role of the Super PAC here is really interesting because, like I said, the two, Parnas and Fruman, had not previously given to Sessions
mm-hmm.
at the time of this meeting, but they were at that same time giving the six-figure contribution to the Super PAC.
Mm-hmm.
And the Super PAC, the finance chair of the Super PAC, is a man named Roy Bailey, who's a Texan. And Roy Bailey goes way back with Pete Sessions. In the past election cycles, Roy Bailey had been Pete Sessions' finance chair for his own campaign. Roy Bailey is also a partner at Giuliani LLC. Bailey goes back with both Giuliani and he goes back with Pete Sessions.
Mm.
So the evidence certainly seems to imply that because Parnas and Fruman laundered this contribution to the Super PAC, it opened doors for this member of Congress.
Sure.
Of course, Super PACs are supposed to be independent. So there's supposed to be this entirely independent operation, not having any real connection to the candidates that they're supporting. But here you've got these two not giving money to Sessions directly, but instead giving money to a Super PAC and then getting the doors opened.
And that Super PAC eventually gave millions of dollars to Pete Sessions, right?
Yeah, it spent about $3 million trying to support his reelection, and he did end up losing.
And so word gets out that there's, two guys, two big Republican donors who are giving hundreds of thousands of dollars to Trump's PAC. Would you mind meeting with them, Mr. Sessions? Of course, I'd love to meet with them. I mean, that seems pretty clear. Do we know where that $500,000 that was given to Giuliani by these guys who is supposedly working for Donald Trump for free for some reason? Do we know where that $500,000 actually came from? Is there any requirement that that money be sourced somehow or reported to U.S. officials in any way?
No. And well, what's interesting about the Sessions meeting, so after the two met with Sessions, about a month later, they both gave maxed out political contributions to his campaign, $2,700 each. According to the indictment, Parnas didn't actually have the money. Parnas, we can get into this more, but he has, he owes money all over the place. He got evicted from his Miami condo just a few years ago. He does not have significant access to money. So in order to cover that contribution, he had to get the money from Fruman, which is itself a violation of the law. But it was right around this time that Parnas's business, Fraud Guarantee, was paying Giuliani $500,000.
Now, just to underscore that, the name of his company is Fraud Guarantee.
Fraud Guarantee, yes, okay. Guaranteed fraud.
Okay, press on, yes.
So Parnas owes money all over the place. He has this trail of failed business ventures, no apparent access to money, didn't even have the $2,800 to give to Pete Sessions, but somehow, miraculously, he has $500,000 laying around to pay Rudy Giuliani. I think there's plenty of reason to suspect that the money that was paid to Giuliani came from some other source. It did not come from Parnas, and it did not come from Parnas's Fraud Guarantee, which, by the way, appears to have been dissolved years earlier by the state of Florida because Parnas was not paying taxes.
So, hence the name Fraud Guarantee. With Giuliani, then, this $500,000, I mean, if this is being paid to him by whoever, private individuals, he's allowed to take this money. He doesn't have to necessarily report it anywhere, correct? Unless he actually is using that money to somehow lobby the U.S. government, in which case he would have to file as a foreign agent under the Foreign Agent Registration Act, FARA. Otherwise, there's no reason to report that funding at all publicly. Am I right about that?
Yeah. There are a lot of problems with the role that Giuliani is playing. So he claims to be the president's personal attorney, but he also is engaged in this sort of shadow diplomacy role. Mm-hmm. He's engaging in foreign policy, influencing foreign leaders, acting with the apparent support of at least some sectors of the State Department, and he's also influencing U.S. policy. He's talking to Trump. Trump is telling top administration officials to talk to Giuliani.
Mm-hmm.
So he has this really important and quasi-official role, but he does not have any of the ethical obligations that would typically attach to a federal employee,
mm-hmm.
and most significantly, financial disclosure reports. Every high-ranking federal employee has to file a financial disclosure report stating their sources of income over the past few years, any debts they owe to anybody else, and they're also subject to recusal obligations, conflict of interest rules. They can't engage in official activities that might benefit them personally or benefit people close to them. Giuliani, because he's not officially a federal employee, is not subject to any of those rules. And then relatedly, there's FARA, the Foreign Agents Registration Act.
Mm-hmm.
So even setting aside these sort of unique questions about whether Giuliani is acting in an official capacity or with the support of the U.S. government, any person who is acting to influence U.S. policy or influence the U.S. population with respect to U.S. policy on behalf of a foreign government or foreign client is supposed to be registered under FARA, and they're supposed to disclose all of their activities, and they're supposed to disclose how much they're being paid,
mm-hmm.
And where that money is coming from.
Which,
and Giuliani has not done that.
And that is, of course, what got Paul Manafort, among other things, what got Paul Manafort into trouble, what got Michael Flynn into trouble. In both of those cases, those guys were indicted for essentially violating FARA, not reporting this money that they were getting from these foreign entities, and then lobbying in some fashion on their behalf. So Parnas and Fruman, they funneled money through a shell corporation. We don't know if it was, do we know if it was foreign money, even if we don't know where it came from?
The for GEP, it's complicated. It was the money used for the political contribution, or the money used for the super PAC contribution, came from a mortgage on a condo owned by Fruman. But the source for that mortgage was private individuals, and that is a pretty odd way of financing a mortgage. Mm. So I think there are still a number of unanswered questions about the original source of that mortgage, which was in the amount of $3 million.
Mm-hmm.
And then there are also additional questions about how Fruman was able to repay that mortgage just a year later.
Uh-huh.
You know, just a year after that private mortgage was given in the amount of $3 million, Fruman was able to repay it in full. And we don't know where the money came from for that either.
So even if we were able to figure out what the sources are for that money, foreign or otherwise, it came through a shell corporation. It went to Trump's campaign super PAC, the ironically named America First Action PAC. And in fact, aside from questions about the sources and whether these two guys lied about it to the FEC, in fact, they are allowed to give this kind of money. They're allowed to give as much money as they want, as I understand it, to super PACs under current campaign finance law, thanks in no small part to Citizens United. Are they not? In other words, giving that money itself is perfectly legal under our current campaign system.
Yeah, there are a number of ways that they could have structured these transactions and found themselves with the same access and influence and to have done so entirely legally.
Mm-hmm.
The six-figure contribution was legal as long as it was derived from U.S. sources and appropriately attributed to the name of the giver. In many other ways, I mean, I think the indictment makes clear that the purpose of the political contributions that Parnas and Fruman made was to buy access and to build influence with powerful political officials in mm-hmm. order to advance their own personal financial interests.
But
that is not what they are being indicted for.
Right, exactly.
The indictment describes the purpose in making these contributions, but it's not. But the purpose is not what they're indicted for.
Right.
They're indicted because they laundered the funds through shell corporations and then lied about it.
Right. Had this been their money, had they been really rich guys and put this money in and then done all of the things that they did, that apparently under our system would have been perfectly legal.
Yes. It would have just been a beautiful expression of their First Amendment right to free speech.
So isn't this the actual nightmare scenario and exactly why dark money is such a concern? I mean, this was two guys who were eventually caught. Actually, there were two others who were also arrested as part of this scheme. And the investigation by the SDNY is ongoing, potentially into Giuliani himself, who used to lead the SDNY as the U.S. attorney there. But this was a relatively small amount of money invested by these two clowns, and they got a whole lot in return for it. They got caught because it wasn't their money, but had it not been their money, I mean, would you say that this Brendan Fischer could well be the tip of the iceberg that is much bigger regarding similar schemes to buy influence by others? Not just with Trump, but all of the Republicans, not just the Republicans, but potentially by Democrats as well. These schemes that we don't even yet know about where, you know, people are putting in their own money to buy this type of influence that actually affects U.S. foreign policy, for crying out loud.
Yeah. So there's a lot there. So, I mean, on the one hand, this indictment of Parnas and Fruman is, really an indictment of our big money political system. It lays out very clearly how powerful political figures operate on this cash for access practice,
mm-hmm.
and it's become entirely commonplace for wealthy political actors to buy their way into congressional offices and into the president's inner circle. And if you don't have money, your voice does not get heard in our democracy. And that part's legal, as you described. I mean, that part does not violate the law.
Mm-hmm.
But then, in the wake of Citizens United, after Citizens United made it legal for all corporations, for profit or nonprofit, LLC or otherwise, mm-hmm. to make contributions in political election in our to make political contributions, mm-hmm. It's become much easier to make contributions without disclosure. Global Energy Producers is one example of that, but mm-hmm. there's been over $1 billion in dark money political spending in the last few election cycles, and we don't know how much of that dark money might disclose foreign funds, but we certainly know that foreign actors and wealthy foreign special interests do want influence in our U.S. political system, and dark money provides an attractive avenue for them to do so.
And not just attractive, but effective. Clearly, it works. Brendan, wouldn't one fantastic campaign finance reform be that you can only, given the money that they ended up giving to Pete Sessions in Texas, they live in Florida. I've always thought that a fantastic campaign finance reform would be that you can only give campaign funds to a candidate who you can actually vote for. These guys were from Florida, I think, so they can't even vote for Sessions. And also, such a law would also serve to keep corporations from giving money to any campaigns, because corporations, they can't vote for anybody. They're corporations. Is there a constitutional problem with that as you see it, Brendan?
I think with this court, it would be a challenge. It would be a challenge to be upheld by this court. But there's certainly a logic to it. Mm-hmm. It's not uncomplicated, to say the least. I mean, if you live in Texas, mm-hmm. and you want to support a progressive senator, the only way you can do it is by giving to a senator who lives outside of your state, and vice versa. If you live in a progressive state and you want to support a conservative member, conservative senator, then you've got to do it by giving to someone who does not directly represent you. And I think there's plenty of people who would want that ability. I think there's no silver bullet to these problems. You know, wealthy interests, both domestic and foreign, are going to want to buy influence, and it requires constant vigilance on all of our parts to limit the potential undue and improper influence buying.
Yeah, and I don't even know how it is that you guys were able to find this and identify this a year ago. I'd hope to get into that, but there's two quick points I want to get to. I'm not going to have time for it because I want to get your thoughts on two things here. When I heard about these arrests, and you and I discussed it a little bit via Twitter a week or so ago, there was a bit of a conspiracy theory angle that immediately occurred to me when I heard that they were arrested. So I'd love to get your thoughts on this. This is Trump's own prosecutor at the DOJ, at the U.S. Attorney's Office in New York, who brought these charges against these two guys who had paid off Trump's super PAC and helped with this scheme to strong arm Ukraine into doing his dirty work and so forth, and to take down Biden before the 2020 campaign. All right in the middle of an impeachment inquiry on the same matter, they get arrested. Parnas and Fruman, before their arrest, they had been notified by the impeachment investigators in Congress that they were seeking both documents and testimony from these two men, and then they were arrested. So in wondering why Trump's own U.S. attorney, the Trump DOJ has not actually, been very helpful in any of this, but Trump's own U.S. attorney arrests Trump's own funders and apparatchiks here, it occurs to me, well, this could keep them from being able to testify to Congress about their involvement in these schemes and from spilling what they know about Trump and Giuliani and the whole mess. Is that too much of a far-fetched conspiracy theory to think, well, they were arrested to keep them from talking to Congress?
Yeah, well, I mean, this investigation has been run out of the Southern District of New York, which is the same office that prosecuted Michael Cohen, for mm-hmm. example, and has been in many ways a thorn in the side of this administration, and the investigation has been going on since well before anybody knew about Ukraine or their role in working with Giuliani to push this Ukraine narrative. Mm-hmm. As you mentioned at the beginning, we filed this complaint back in July of 2018. It's been reported that when Bill Barr took office, mm-hmm. he was briefed in February of this year, February 2019, that this investigation was happening. So this is not new. It's been something that's been that the SDNY has been working on for quite some time. Well before anybody would have had any idea that this Ukrainian stuff could have led to impeachment.
Right. The investigations were ongoing, but the arrests didn't happen. I mean, you can keep an investigation going on forever and then just drop it. The arrests didn't happen until just days before they were supposed to testify to Congress.
Yeah. Well, but I think the other part is that they were arrested at Dulles Airport with one-way tickets to Vienna.
Right.
So I think I would not be at all surprised if the theory there is that these two left, they were not coming back.
You're right.
So I think that strikes me as the most likely scenario. And the prospect of criminal charges could lead these two to be a little bit more forthcoming about what it is that they know, where the money might come from, and how what role Giuliani may have played in all of this.
True, although it does keep them from, they will have every right now to claim a Fifth Amendment right not to incriminate themselves in speaking to Congress, because, hey, they're facing a criminal indictment right now, so they have every reason to not cooperate at all with Congress, it seems to me. But so we're going to get more on that, I'm sure. Let me get one last thought from you here, Brendan. I'm sure you've got some, you and Campaign Legal Center have some thoughts on this announcement late on Thursday from Mick Mulvaney that, in fact, the G7 summit that is being hosted by the U.S. next year will now, in fact, be held at the Trump National Doral Resort, Trump's own resort. I'll just hand that to you. Your thoughts on that?
Yeah, it's astonishing. I mean, you can't really find a clear example of the conflicts of interest that arise from President Trump failing to divest from his family business when he took office. I mean, this is the president awarding a massive contract to himself. It means that both U.S. taxpayer money and foreign government funds are going to flow directly into the Trump family bank accounts. And we already know that foreign leaders are routinely spending money at Trump properties in order to curry favor with the president. That was something that the Ukrainian president mentioned on his now infamous phone call with President Trump. But now, as a result of the G7 being located at Trump's own property, I think this is the first time that Trump is going to effectively force foreign governments to spend money at his properties and put money into his pocket.
In direct violation of the Constitution's Emoluments Clause, which strictly prohibits foreign leaders from giving money to a president. And Trump can't claim, I guess. There was some sort of, at the beginning of his presidency, some sort of trust set up where he is hands over the business to his sons, but he still profits from them, right? He can't say, oh, I gave that all away to my family. I make no profit, can he?
No, the president is still profiting from the Trump Organization and his family, and his family is still running it and apparently giving occasional updates on the successes and failures of the business.
Okay, just amazing. More to come, no doubt. Brendan Fisher, Associate Counsel at the Campaign Legal Center in Washington, D.C. Congratulations once again on being early to this Fruman, Parnas and Fruman story. And as it unfolds, I suspect we'll be calling you back to explain more of this, because it is amazing, and not just on its own, but what it says about our entire system of campaign funding in this country. You can find Brendan Fisher at campaignlegal.org and on the Twitters at Brendan_Fisher. Thank you, my friend. Always great talking to you.
All right. Thank you.
Okay, quick break, and we're back with our closing few minutes, maybe a little bit more on this Doral thing. We'll see what we have time for. I'm Brad Friedman. This is The Bradcast.
The walls come tumbling down. The walls come crumbling, crumbling.
Getting there.
Seems like it.
Close. Welcome back to the Bradcast. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. Desi Doyen. We started the show with a clip from Fox News.
Yep.
John Yoo, the torture memo author under the George W. Bush administration, his appearance on the Laura Ingraham show, defending the president, somehow saying that you can't impeach a president when it's so close to an election. Just making stuff up out of whole cloth.
Which he does.
That's
very well.
That's what he gets paid for.
Yeah.
So, all right. But not everything is going well for Donald Trump over at Fox News. On this point of Donald Trump using his own Doral resort down in Florida for the G7 summit next year. Well, Neil Cavuto and Judge Andrew Napolitano do not think that is allowable, as they discussed Thursday night on Fox News.
They are arguing that this is not a violation of the Emoluments Clause where someone is profiting off of something. I believe Judge Andrew Napolitano has a different notion of that. What do you think?
Well, Neil, it's not my notion. It's the Constitution's notion. It addresses any present, as in a gift, any emolument, as in cash, of any kind whatever. I'm quoting the Emoluments Clause, from any king, prince, or foreign state. The purpose of the Emoluments Clause is to keep the President of the United States of America from profiting off of foreign money. Here we go again. Not in the campaign, but in some event or entity that he controls or is running. This is about as direct and profound a violation of the Emoluments Clause as one could create.
Oops, that's going to send Napolitano and Cavuto off to Shepard Smith land, I suspect. At least it might. I mean,
we shall see.
We shall see. They don't care for it, and we got about a year to talk about it. So we'll see what defense Fox News comes up with other than firing those two guys. That's it. We got to get out of here. My thanks to Brendan Fisher of the Campaign Legal Center, to my producer, Desi Doyen, and to all of you for spending a portion of your day or night with us. If you missed any portion of today's program or any other, download it, share it with your friends for free at bradblog.com. That is made possible by those of you who stop by bradblog.com/donate to keep Desi and I on your public airwaves without political influence, without corporate influence, without anyone's influence other than what she and I think. Mostly what she thinks. You can find and follow me on the Facebooks and the Twitters at The Brad Blog. You can drop me email if you like. I am bradcast@bradblog.com, and that is it. Until we meet again, I'm Brad Friedman. Good luck, world.